Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we are live tonight. This is December the 27th in the year 2013. We just got back from a long trip in Asia and Australia. We've been gone for 6 weeks. So I know you've been listening to archive shows while I'm gone. But tonight we're live, so if anyone wants to call in, you can do it. We're going to mostly fill you in on the things that happened during the trip.
I'd like to first wish everyone a Merry Christmas. I'm glad you're joining us tonight.
We got back just in time. We didn't know if we were going to get back in time or not, but we just made it in time for Christmas. When I think now we're over jet lag. It took me a little longer this time. Usually it takes a couple of days. It was about 3 days to get over it. But while we were gone, they had lots of snow, and I kept saying, it'll be melted by the time we get back, and it was. But now we're back, and Christmas is over, and we're headed toward New Year's. It's hard to believe. The whole year has gone so fast.
Right. I was just looking at this, and where it says you started the show October 2005, and I remember that. I know that. But to see it written there like that and go, and this is 2013, you've been doing the show for 8 years now.
Yeah.
And that's just like, I remember when you started doing it.
I know. Whenever Don was having all the problems with the broadcasting and the networks, and his equipment failing, and we had, he moved out to California, so there was a lot going on in those days.
Right.
Now it's a lot more stable. We just have gremlins every once in a while. Yeah, that's 8 years now we've been doing this show. That seem weird?
It does. It's really flown by. But wow.
We've done, I think I had on here, we're on our 200th and something, a live show.
Okay.
We have all the other ones that are archived. So it's actually 8 years of it, but a lot of those were not live.
Mm-hmm.
But counting the live shows, yeah, we're on the 220th live show. So we had a big supply of archives there that they've
right.
been drawing from all these years. That's a lot of talking.
Yes, but you can do it.
Well, we had a lot of wonderful guests, too, along
right.
the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, now another week here we're going to be, I guess we come on next week, we'll be already be in 2014.
That's right.
Wow. And the time just goes so fast. Let me go ahead and give out the toll-free number. Anyone who wants to call in tonight is welcome to do it. 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Yeah, and I remember and always had a lot of call-ins, too. That people trying to get in those early days, and now we're all over the world. Don has done terrific with this show.
Right.
It's his dream. He's followed through on it.
Mm-hmm.
You're always telling people, if you've got a dream, follow it. Otherwise, you'll regret it later.
Right.
And dreams are not easy. We know that. That to do it, you have to believe in it, and it's not easy. But if you don't, you'll regret it the rest of your life.
Right.
Okay, well, we just got back from this trip, and we're going to talk about that. If anybody wants to call in, they're free to do it. But we've been gone 6 weeks. We left
I don't even know.
With our movement, during Christmas, we had a house full of kids and relatives and all our family. We got a big family. We didn't even have half of them here. And we were trying to tell them what was going on. And I couldn't even remember what country we were in when we were telling the story.
Well, because we've had so many events back to back. And so that's where, I mean, we went to Mexico and did a class. And I think we've talked about that. Then we had a class here. And then immediately after,
we went
to the cruise.
The cruise, I had a class on the cruise. These things are just been one
right.
after the
and
other.
And then I don't think it was even a week or about a week. And then we went on this trip. So it's just been everything back to back.
It's hard to remember where we were and what we were doing. This trip would have been longer, and we would have only had a day or two between. originally we were supposed to go to Istanbul to a UFO conference they were having there, and then that was canceled. So it gave us a week anyway to get ready for this long 6-week one. Well, we went first to Beijing, and we were there for 2 weeks. And, well, last year we were in China 3 times, so we're getting used to China. But, yeah, I like the people. The people are wonderful there.
Everywhere.
Everywhere we go, we don't have any problems at all.
Right.
It's just getting used to the food. And China is a different kind of food, but we survive.
Well, we weren't eating their food except in one place I did. But
you're going to talk about that.
Yes. Uh-huh. But
yeah, they were trying their best they could in the place we were staying for the classes to give us Americanized Chinese food.
Right. It was their, what they thought American food was.
But it was okay. We could
eat
it. Yeah.
I thought it was great.
But we had a level 2 class and a level 1 in Beijing. And the level 1 was 100 students. And I am so proud of these Chinese students that are taking the class. The level 2, when they've taken that, they're getting it. They're really understanding it. And they're having miracles happen. So it's showing it's happening all over the world, everywhere they're taking the class. It's wonderful things are happening. Because they're understanding it. But now that we're doing the level 2 in a different way, we're turning out more powerful practitioners, too.
Right.
Because we're doing a more one-on-one, individual training. But we had 100 students in the level 1, and they were really understanding it. You never know when you got a translator. You know,
you'd be acting surprised. It's like,
well,
they
yeah,
like all the other translated classes we had.
But you know, we always hope it's coming across with translation. Well, we have a wonderful young man in China. He's been there last year 3 times and on the cruise with us to the Mediterranean. And this year, he's a wonderful translator. I mean, we couldn't do anything without him.
Right.
But I always wonder when they're doing it, are we really getting translation? A lot of things can be lost. Well, especially, that's why I try not to use any slang or expressions that they are not, they're going to be lost in translation. But one thing I want to say about everywhere we went to China, we're going to talk about each place, Beijing and Taiwan and Tokyo. But everywhere we went, they are really into Christmas over there. I was really surprised.
Well, they had the decorations up. What I was told it was because of the commercialism and shopping, just like it is here. But
I was surprised they're really into it that much.
They had more decorations than Australia did, than Sydney did.
But they have big Christmas trees everywhere you go, and a lot of lights on the streets and in the stores. It's really decorated up. And that's why I told them I was surprised, because they're mostly Buddhists over there. They would be celebrating Christmas. Well, they're not into the religious part at all.
Right.
They're into Santa Claus.
Exactly.
Santa Claus and the presents. And there was Santas everywhere. So that's really caught on all over the world. But people out there buying presents, just like we do, you wouldn't have thought you were anywhere else but the United States. And they really got into Christmas. It was November we went over there. It was before Thanksgiving. Of course, they don't celebrate that. But they were into the Christmas things. And I thought it was wonderful the way that everything was lit up. They said we just missed it. They've been having a lot of trouble with real heavy smog in Beijing. And a lot of it's caused by all the traffic. And the pictures I saw on the internet just before we left, walking on the street, you couldn't even see your hand in front of your face.
Before we left?
To go to Beijing.
Well, then there were reports after we left Beijing.
The same thing?
Yeah.
But
so, see, we always, wherever we go, we have a bubble around us. So
we didn't have that because they were canceling flights because there was so much smog. But they was telling it it's because of the traffic. And the traffic is really heavy in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were telling us, though. You can't get a car that easy over there anymore. There are just too many cars.
That was very surprising how they do that.
Too many cars.
Well, yeah. Too many people.
Well, too many people and too many cars. And the cars was causing a lot of the smog.
Right.
And they said they love it when the wind blows because that blows the smog away. You tell them what they're doing, how they get a car over there.
Well, they said it was like a lottery. They just have their numbers in a like a lottery pull, and you're registered in there. And then when they pull your number, then you can go get a car. That's when you can get your license and can get a car. It's purely a lottery ticket, essentially. It's not by choice. And until you get your ticket pulled, you're on public transportation, a bicycle or a motor scooter.
Uh-huh. And they have a lot of trains.
Rides with other people.
Yeah. They have a lot of trains and buses and things. But it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you got money to buy a car outright, you can't do it.
Well, you might be able to do it, but you can't drive it until you get...
Yeah.
They pull your license.
Yeah, you just buy a car and it's going to sit there. So that's one way, you know. I guess the way these countries do, I guess if we had came up with the same problem, we'd figure out a way to do it.
Right. I mean, it's an answer.
Yeah.
It also shows us how privileged we are over here to be able to just go get a car and drive it whenever we want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and over there, we was there last year, they said I wouldn't be allowed to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was said if you get by 65 or 70 years old, you're not allowed to drive a car anymore. And they were surprised that I had my own car. Yeah, I didn't have to go through a lottery process.
Right.
But that's the difference over there. You know, there's a lot of the older people, they won't let do anything. Well, then they all live together in their own communal houses anyway. So that which I would never stand for. I've got too big a family. I don't want them all living with me.
Yeah, but if you were raised in it, it'd be different.
And that's your way of life. Well, one thing while we were in Beijing, we were there when history was being made.
That was really cool.
Because, you know, since the 1970s, I think, is when they first, so they were saying it's been that long, since they started the one-child-only rule in China, because they were just, the population is just way out of control. So they had to do something to control it. And when I was there last year, I was talking on the radio about who are we to criticize other countries until we are faced with the same circumstance? How would we handle it? So the only answer they had was just to allow one child per family. Well, now we were over there. They're finding out it's got a lot of problems.
Right. They didn't think it out far enough in the future.
Yeah, they didn't think that, what, that'd be 40 years. Now, they haven't thought 35, 40 years.
Right. I think they said they've gone about two generations, and it's really having an impact on their socioeconomic system.
Yeah, and I guess when you come up with the idea, it sounds like a good idea, but you don't plan it that far in advance. So they're finding out, well, one thing, they don't have the workforce, especially if we're out in the country. The agricultural workforce, they don't have it, with just having one child per family.
Right. I mean, we don't think about it, but, I mean, these are all things that go into the whole...
what do you call it, ecostructure?
Right, or? Right, the ecostructure, yeah, of societies, you know, and how the whole thing plays out. You have your population... You know, they're working force, and then as they grow older, then they retire, then the younger working forces are paying into the funds that take care of them, and it's just an ongoing thing. Each generation takes care of the one before or the two before or whatever, and that's where, you know, you don't think about it. I mean, we probably will have similar things because we have this one population that's aging. That's what they keep talking about. That baby boomer group is aging, and it's a very large group of people. And there aren't as many coming up behind them to support. So these are very real situations. And you don't think about it until you're... I mean, they were very frank on the news over there. The ones that I could... there was only one channel that I could understand.
In English. Yeah.
And that's what they kept talking about because this was happening right then. But they kept talking about, we need the younger people to take care of the older people. And it was just, this is what it is. This is how it is. We don't say that over here. We don't point blank put it out there like that.
Because they said there's all these older people that are still alive. You know, they're getting older. That were part of that when they started the one child only. Now the younger ones coming up, one person has to take care of all these other generations.
I think they said it took 8. Remember on that one show, I want to say they said it took like 8 people to support 2 elderly or 1 elderly or something like that. That's how the force. But then because they did that cut, there's only, it's like they have now 4 people. Because you have 2 sets of parents when you get married, so 4 people are going on the shoulders of a one person or a couple, and it's a lot of weight. And so
really,
that's, and then if they ever have children, also a lot of money, a lot of concern that they had to deal with.
Yeah, and that's what they said. They didn't thought about that. Who's going to take care of the older generation? Of course, they figured as they die out. But there's a lot of things like that weren't thought out.
Right.
But also was the workforce. Because all of a sudden they don't have enough people to manufacture, and also mostly out in the country where they have the agriculture and the growing, they don't have the people they used to have to do the agriculture work, the picking and taking care of the animals and growing things.
Well, as that, as well as the tax base.
Yeah.
It's all of that because all that supports the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have, it falls a lot on the ones that are the young working force.
But the ones in the country, there's not enough now to maintain, have the growing of the food. You always got to think of that, the growing of the food to take care of the people.
Yes.
All of that. So it was interesting that we hadn't thought about that, but though they said this was groundbreaking, was history making while we were there. They've decided to allow the people to have another child.
Yeah, there are other, it's not quite that blanket, like it sounded at first. It's like there's some
other regulations.
Other regulations, but basically, in the gist of it, yes, they're going to allow them to have another child. So
they've got to manage it so they won't have the population explosion. They finally stabled out.
Well, and that's what they're asking people. They were doing a thing, and they said, their cities are huge. You know, 40 million people, 50, I mean, it was like, they're huge cities. And they said, okay, if now you can have another child, I mean, that can potentially double that city, you know. And that's what they were asking people, well, will you have another one? And it was about even. Some of them said yes, they wanted to, and then others said, no, I can't afford to have another one. So they've already gotten accustomed to what it would take to raise one.
Mm-hmm. On that port, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've taken them, 35, 40 years now to finally stabilize the population. They got it to where it's even, but then it's out of balance in so many other ways.
Right.
But yeah, that was interesting. They said they were asking, if now that the law is passed, will you have a child? And a lot of them don't want to. Some of them don't even want to get married. So I guess it's balancing out in other ways.
Right. And it could be because they're so open about it, then people are able to make conscientious choices, you know, and how they want to work with the future. Because I think most part, otherwise it's just, well, they don't realize their part in the future.
Yeah.
That they play.
I know we were talking to some of our students. We had 100 students in our level one, the big class, and they can't really comprehend that we have so many children.
Right. That was something that was difficult for them.
Yeah, because we have big families over here. And they couldn't understand that people wanting to have a lot of children.
Yeah, I think it's been driven into them to not want children. So that was another way of taking care of that.
Yeah. And I said, well, over here in America and Europe, other parts of the world, people like a lot of children. So we don't have that problem in America yet. Who knows what's going to happen in the future?
No, but, I mean, we have dramatically decreased the number that we have. It's not because people are forcing us to, but most people have automatically. You know, where it used to be, it was normal to have 4, 5, 6 children. Now it's more like 2 to 3, something like that. And that's not across the board, but you're seeing it. It just naturally did it because they kept pushing only replace yourself. only yeah. replace yourself. So.
Hmm. Yeah, and Europe is doing the same thing. We found when we go to Europe, a lot of them don't want to get married, and they don't want families. They'd rather be in the business force. But now, India is another problem. We go there, they're out of control. But I don't know what they're going to do about that. It's up to the people, you know.
That country.
Yeah, each country, what they decide. But we travel so much, we get to see all of this firsthand. And it's interesting to see how each country handles these things. Everywhere we go, I always want to know, what about the elderly? You know, how do you take care of them? What do you do? And how do you manage all of this? Some of the countries do a better job than we do.
Absolutely.
On not this, but other things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So we could learn a lot from some of these countries.
Well, that's just it. We learn a lot from each other all over the place. So.
Mm-hmm. That's why people are people everywhere we go. We don't have any problem with people. A lot of us say, how can you travel all this so much? Aren't you afraid? And no, we've never been afraid.
Never been afraid. No, the traveling is hard, but we've never been afraid.
Of the people.
No, not at all.
Yeah, the long trips, the long hours on the plane is the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Beijing. We did the new route that we took the one time last year. You go over the pole now. It cut about 3 hours off the flight. So we didn't see Santa Claus, but we didn't see his house, but we flew over the pole.
I saw it. I saw the workshop with the elf.
You
he
did?
He wasn't out. He was resting, I guess.
Well, you were on the other side of the plane. Yeah, you saw things I didn't see. But anyway, we were in Beijing, and I was there for 2 weeks. And I just got to say this. My assistant went with us. And it was a big culture shock. She'd never been anywhere like this. But her culture shock was they didn't have any coffee.
Well, that's a big deal if you're a major coffee drinker. I'm sure we have lots of major coffee drinkers out there.
Yeah.
And they will totally understand.
No coffee in Beijing. They like tea. Well, just like in England.
Well, they had coffee, but it was not like American coffee at all.
Not the way we are
right.
addicted to it over here. So that was a culture shock for her. Things like that. And also, no Facebook and no YouTube.
Right, in China. No.
In China. The translator said they really don't want people to know what's going on in the outside world. But they know anyway.
Just like everybody, they figure out ways to find out. So.
There's ways to get around all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But... So we have a lot of things here we don't even appreciate that like that. Although I don't even go on Facebook and those things. A lot of people, that's their whole life.
Right. Well, and it is hers. I mean, that's how she stays in touch with everybody, and that's how she planned to stay in touch with everybody back home. Because this was a major trip for her, first time that extensive and that far away. So this was one of the things that she knew she could hold on to be able to see her family. And then it wasn't there. So
yeah,
that was a big deal.
What do you mean, no coffee and no Facebook?
Right, that was a lot of
big,
withdrawal.
She was having withdrawal symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you've got to tell them about your trip to the Great Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every time we've gone to Beijing, I always wanted to go to the Great Wall, but, you know, we've never got out there. And the last trip, you said, you've got to go. You said you had to go because... Why come that far and not get to see it? It's one of the major wonders
of
the world.
Well, it's right there. I mean, it'd be different if it was across the country, but it's right there where we were. So,
outside Beijing.
Yes.
I didn't want to go because I'm not really into all that walking anymore like that. Now, Julia, you know, she went up and down the pyramids and down inside the pyramids. She can do that. I don't really want to do it. But so her and my assistant, Mavis, went out to the Great Wall.
Right.
So tell them what that was like to see that.
Oh, it's amazing. It's unbelievable, actually, because you see it for quite a ways. You're a ways out.
You drove.
We drove. It was about an hour and a half outside of Beijing. And were driving, you're going up into mountains or anything, and all of a sudden I look, I was like, what is that? You see something way over on this mountain, and it's just, it's that, you know, it's very, you can see it. It was way off still. I thought, is that what I think it is? I said, oh, yeah, that's a great wall. And I'm like, nothing. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
So we're snapping pictures from a long ways away. I think we were still, I don't know, a good half hour, 45 minutes. I mean, you can see it from that far away. And then as you get closer, you can't see it because it's on the top of that mountain. We stopped to get some lunch. Before it, I mean, it's way up there because it's on the top of the mountain, and that was what's amazing.
Of course, it's so long, you know, that you could never go the whole length because it goes the whole border.
Well, that could be somebody's challenge, you know, to say to walk the whole thing.
But that'd be miles and miles and miles and miles.
You know, people do marathons. People do, you know, that could be. I imagine there's people that have done it. Have
probably
walked the entire
have.
Wall. That would be quite an accomplishment.
Separates China from Mongolia. Mm-hmm. But tell them what happened when you went. Tell them about the lunch first.
No, I can. Yeah. Our first thing was to get lunch, and it was at a little restaurant at the foot of the mountain, where you go up there and everything. And this is supposed to be a famous. They said it was a famous fish restaurant. I have no idea. But it's one of these where you pick your fish out. They're swimming out there in this little channel in front of the restaurant, and you just pick it, and I said, I'm not real comfortable with naming my food before I eat it, you know. It's like Kevin and Leo took us out there. Leo is a translator, and Kevin was one of the students in level 2 class, and so they took us out so we can, you know, to be our tour
guide. You don't
want
to personally know your food you're
going
to eat.
No, I'd rather not. It's getting harder and harder anyway. I think that's something that's shifting in me, is, you know, I don't eat that much beef or any of those things. I eat mostly chicken and fish. And now, sometimes when I'm eating them, I'll see their faces. And it's like, oh, man. And that's kind of like, I think it's trying to shift me to let them be and not eat them anymore because I really don't want to see their faces. And
well,
then now,
some countries, they have the whole fish with the face.
I know,
on.
And that's hard. That's why I don't want to have the face
and
on
the
there.
And the shrimp with the face.
Yes, I don't like that. I don't want to see the face. I don't want to see the head. And then sometimes, I'm something where the head's not associated with it at all, and I'm seeing the face of the animal. And it's like, oh, I don't. And so then, you know, so I went out and I thanked the fish before when I found out that we were going to be eating one of them, and so I thanked them ahead of time, and, you know, so I do that anyway. I thank my food, so I thank the animal or whatever it is that gave its life for me, but anyway, so I did that. We go into the restaurant, quickly found out it's not, I don't think it's a, it may be a famous restaurant. I don't know how they do things over there, but it was a very local restaurant. It was all the locals from right there that worked there were coming in because there were a lot of people coming in on their lunch hour and all these things, and our first clue that there was not going to be a whole lot of catering was there were no Western utensils. It was all chopsticks. Every place else we've been, there's usually an option to get something like that. So it's like, okay.
But you were outside of Beijing.
We were outside of Beijing, yeah, but I thought this was, you know, but this is a very major tourist site, too. But the part that we went to was not the one that most of the people go to. We were going to this other one. So I think it's more the local entrance.
Okay.
So we go in there, and Leo, he says, I'm going to order Chinese dishes so you can have the Chinese experience. And but then he first said, okay, what, you know, you want some chicken? That's fine. That's always a standard. Let's have some chicken. We knew we were going to have that one of those fish out there. And then we're going to have some chicken. And we said, okay, chicken and beans. And it's like, okay. And then he ordered some other traditional Chinese dishes. We had rice, and we saw some potatoes that somebody had on another plate. It was like shredded potatoes, kind of cast brown. And anyway, little pieces. That's how they do their meals over there. It's a lot of little dishes. They put it on this great big Lazy Susan type thing, and then everybody shares. You know, it just keeps passing around, and you just pick out what you want, and you eat. Well, and then but the other thing that's weird over there, it's different. I'm going to say it's weird, but it's different, is they don't, I mean, you know how America, do you bring everything out when the whole thing is ready for everybody at the table? They bring it all out at once. Well, there, they bring out the dishes as they are done, And then you've got these things coming willy-nilly all over the place, and so you just start eating, and you don't know when the next piece is coming, and you just and they just keep doing that. It's like you're snacking and the whole time. Anyway, so the first thing that came out was this chicken in a bowl, and it's just a little medium-sized bowl, and it's got chicken in it. And so I picked a piece out of there. It wasn't really a pan. I just picked, like, I don't know, maybe a drumstick or something. It's some little piece. Maybe it was a piece of a wing. I don't know. And tasted that, and then some rice came out, just pieces. And then that chicken made its way around, and it came back around. I'm looking at the bowl, and I thought, that's not what I think it is it? And Leah's like, what? I'm like, what is that on the top? And on the top of this bowl was this chicken foot just sitting there on the top of the bowl. I'm like, what? And it's just got its claws. I'm like, no.
Well, they told us last year they don't waste anything.
I know, but I wasn't, because I'd had a conversation before we ever left that day with someone else, and I said, well, as long as they don't have all the pieces and parts of chickens, I'll be fine, all the feet and the heads, and I'll be fine. And somebody said, oh, no, this is a nice restaurant, they won't be doing that. So anyway, here's his foot. And I thought, oh, my goodness. So Mavis takes it out, and she's taking pictures of it, and stuff, and so she's like, okay, I'm not having any chicken. So, anyway, it makes its way around, and another time, and when it comes back, well, I made a comment to Leo, and I said, now, there's not going to be a head under here, is there? Oh, no, there won't be one, because it was a little bowl. It wasn't very big. Now, there's no way a head's going to be in there. And it comes back around, and I'm like, oh, no, Leo, please don't tell me that's what it looks like. And it was the comb on the top of the chicken's head. I could see that. So, and sure enough, it was. And Mavis dug it out. There was the chicken's head. I was like, oh, no. I mean, I really don't want to see the animal's faces. You know? So, anyway.
Well, we're not criticizing. It's just that, you know, Americans.
I'm not used to it. Not
Americans.
Used to it.
Don't eat other countries, they do eat everything, but we're
absolutely
not used to
no
it.
And it's fine, it's nothing against it, it's just I wasn't prepared for it. I'm not used to it, and I wasn't prepared for it, so it and like I said, that's been something that's been happening to me anyway, where I don't want to see the faces, and that's really something I'm not used to seeing a face of on
the
my
chicken
food,
in
you know?
The bowl.
Right. And
chicken
it was just, it was
and Mavis took a picture of that, too.
Right. She took a picture of it, and then she was going to send those pictures back home to her family when they were having Thanksgiving dinner. She was going to just do a little joke with them. But
But anyway, then tell about how you got up to the Great Wall.
Yeah, that was a great climb. So after this, because we needed that, I'm glad we did this, because we needed the strength. So you get there, we parked, and then you walk up this steep hill just to get to the cable cars that go up steep mountain. They get to the platform that just where you take the steps that go up the wall. It's very steep, very steep.
I'm glad I could not have done it.
Right. I mean, all on that first walking up there are all these shops, there are all these little booths, these vendors selling their wares. But it's really steep, just that street. And that's before you get the cable cars, and then it's like climbing the mountain in the cable cars. But, yeah, that was a lot just right there. Everything was climbing. Finally get up to, they have like this where the cable cars come in, and then you go up some stairs on the side, and then you actually get into on the wall because you're going up the side, and then it goes into these little, what do you call them?
It's the place for the sentries.
Yes. Yeah, so almost like little forts.
Little buildings.
Right.
Little houses up
right.
there, stone houses
right.
where the sentries would be.
Right. And so it went into there, and then you could go one way or the other. It had steps going down each side. But the thing that was so amazing to me, I mean, it's wide. It's probably at least 10 feet wide, the whole thing, and it goes. But what was so weird was, or amazing, was this thing just follows the mountain. It's right on the top of the mountain, and it's following it exactly. It's not, and they didn't pave that away. They didn't, bulldoze anything out to make it flat. And like that, it's going up and down. It's very steep, and it's going up and down the mountain peaks and everything, you know, it's following the mountain.
Hmm.
And it's just amazing what went into doing this. just going out of one of the sentries, you know, to walk down the next part and go across, it's just really, really steep.
And you said even the steps are not even.
Oh, no, not at all. There's nothing even. They were just making things work, you know. I mean, it's amazing what is there. It's amazing. And in one of the sentries, they had it all lined with paper, and people were writing their names and things on that. So we did get our names put in there. So that was cool. So I'm in the Great Wall.
It's like we went to Ephesus. They were making mm-hmm. little notes
yeah,
and putting them in the wall.
Prayer wall, yeah.
Uh-huh. But it's a lot taller and bigger than it looks like in the pictures then.
The wall, well, it's like a fortress because it's got the cutouts, like if it were, like people were up there with guns and things like that.
Well, it wasn't guns, it was bows and arrows.
Whatever they had were weapons, you know, so they had the cutouts. It's that kind of a wall, just like you would see in a palace or something. Both sides are that way. And then it had these little sentries every so often. And they had all these levels to them where they probably sat up there and did all, you know, where they could observe and see things. But the height of it was probably, it was taller. The walls were taller than me, but where the cutout was, like you could bend over and see.
Mm.
So it's just about the height of me.
And they said they built that, you know, was centuries ago, but they built it to keep the Mongolians out, to keep the enemy out. But after they got it all built, they said it didn't do any good. They just climbed over the wall anyway.
Yeah, if they can climb that mountain up to there, they can climb that. If you're that good of a climber, you can do it.
But you said they had a sign that said they built it to keep the enemy.
Oh, that was cool. I took a picture of that sign. I need to post it. They said it was built to keep the enemy out, and it was all this bloodshed and everything to keep the enemy out. But now, the gist of it, now it's so beautiful because of it, it pulls the world together because they all come to see it. So in that way, it has united the world.
Uh-huh. Hmm. That's good. That's interesting. Hmm.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting day.
Very. Yeah, it was. That's one of those once-in-a-lifetime things. You know, that's what I'm trying to do now. I mean, I guess that's one, we kept saying that's a bucket list item. You know, that's something you want. If you can do it and you have the opportunity to do it, not very many people can say they've walked the Great Wall of China.
Well, it's like you in the pyramids.
Right.
And then only a few weeks ago, we were in the Panama Canal.
Right.
These are all things that we like to check off that we get to do with this wonderful work we're involved
right.
with.
Absolutely.
But I do want to make a remark. In my China class, before we left, we were getting our... getting ready for the class and everything, we got an email from a man in Mongolia. And I said, Mongolia? To me, that's the ends of the earth. And here we're getting an email from somebody in Mongolia. And he said he's at a cancer hospital in Mongolia. I can't pronounce the name of the capital. But he said he wanted me to learn the technique. And he had some others there that wanted to learn, and they wanted to know, could we come to Mongolia to teach on that trip? And that's what I mean to me. That's like somebody on the end of the earth asking you to come. I'm amazed. I said, how did you find out about me? Internet.
Mm-hmm. He could get YouTube.
Yeah, he could get YouTube. He found out about me. I said, in Mongolia? But I told him there was no way we could come that far for just a small group of people. So he had two choices. He could either come to Beijing and take the class there or take the online class. So he agreed to come to Beijing. He was a wonderful man.
Very sweet.
And he very much devoted, you know, he really wants to work with the cancer and help the people. And he couldn't speak Chinese. But his English was good enough that apparently he followed me with the class. But he was really dedicated. He really wanted to learn this technique and take it back to Mongolia. But I said, now I think we are reaching all the corners of the earth when you got something like that. As we know, when we did the Russian class, we had some people from Siberia that came. But I said, Mongolia, I would never expect to meet somebody from there. So
But you're still thinking of them the way you probably were taught about them in your childhood, and that's not them at all.
That's what he was telling us. He said they're no longer riding around on horses with the big fur hats and all of that, and the yaks. So our impression of most of the world is not the way it really is. So when you go to these countries, you find out it's really more modernized everywhere than we could have ever imagined. Mm. So
we haven't seen too many places that aren't modern, but I know that there are places like that, but we haven't gone there yet.
Yeah. They're not really in our, what I think they would ask us to come,
right.
Really. But it shows most of the world, those are just stories of people that what you think things are supposed to be like, and they're not like that anymore at all. We're all very modern everywhere. But anyway, that was interesting. But then we went to Taiwan. We were there last year and giving a lecture, and they wanted us to come back and do a class. And that's a different, it's a culture shock in its own.
Well, that's so much like America.
Yeah, I said, when you go to Taiwan, it's like East meets West. So much of American influence is in there that you don't even think you're out of America.
Well, I mean, they even take our electric plug. Their outlet fits our electricity. It's all the same. So that tells you something right there. If our plug fits their outlet, we have a lot of American influence there.
Mm-hmm. But everywhere you go, I mean, there's all the stores and the little,
yeah, it's all
you know, 7-Elevens, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, everywhere. And you swear you were in America.
Right.
Also, motorcycles have taken over.
Well, they're motor scooters. You keep calling motorcycles, they're motor scooters.
You don't think they're as big as a motorcycle?
No. There might have been a couple like that, but for the most part, they're called scooters.
Okay. But there again, it's a traffic jam like it was in Beijing. There's so much traffic. In order to get around that, they have these scooters. But everybody rides them.
Well, and it's probably because it's so inexpensive, too, and they're easy to park. They have lack of parking spaces.
All along the sidewalks in front of every shopping place there was all these lines and lines of scooters. And everywhere, they were ducking in and out of traffic, too. So it was, it's the most we saw anywhere. And that was worse parking, worse traffic than in London, I think.
No. London's bad.
But Beijing was a lot of cars, but here it was cars and mostly scooters. But Taiwan, we like that. We've been there before. And it's very modern.
Right. It's easy to figure it out. I mean, we kept going out and walking around, so we had that section of town
where we were.
A few blocks that we were, we had
but
that
then Taiwan
out.
Is not very big anyway. It's an island. But then we went to Tokyo. Now, Tokyo, to me, was different. Very modern. But I felt a kind of a dark feeling there.
I didn't have any problem. I immediately was getting London references to it. It felt like London to me, and I kept thinking, why on earth does Tokyo feel like London? Because
the shops
didn't.
And the way
no, it was just no. I think immediately it was because the way they drive. They drive on the they drive the same way as in England. And that was my first thing. But then there was something. I don't know that I can even remember what it was.
The way the streets were laid out or something.
Something. And the way the little, it's the way the village, the way the city was done. And the way the stores were. And I thought, it reminded me of London. And so I asked. I said, why do I keep feeling like I'm being reminded of London? And they finally said, well, after the war, the British came in, and they had a huge influence on rebuilding the city.
Yeah, because you got to remember, World War II, we bombed Tokyo to pieces. And then we came in and occupied it for many years. We had the Allies. One of them was England and France, and they were in there helping to occupy it. So I imagine they had a big part to play in how to rebuild it.
Apparently they had a very big part to play.
In the streets and everything. But it's a very modern city. Interesting, the earthquake, was it been 2 years ago, that destroyed the nuclear plant on the North Island, and they said that it'll never be rebuilt. It is, the radiation is too high, and it's really bad, and they evacuated the people out around that because they never go back. The radiation is too high, and that they can't use it for electrical power anymore. That's been destroyed.
Well, so, actually, while we were there, that was something else that was happening. While we were there, they were going in to take the rods out. They were dismantling that plant.
They're trying to get it.
They were taking the rods out.
But I said, well, what are you using for electricity? And it shows that if we don't really need the nuclear. They have ways of doing this. These scientists get their heads together. And they said, we figured out other ways to get electricity. And one thing they're doing is with the tides, because they said Japan is primarily an island, group of islands, and they have the ocean on both sides. So when the tide comes in and out, somehow they're able to harness that power to create electricity. And they've also, by walking on the sidewalks, are generating electricity. I read an article one time that said this was possible, but apparently they followed through on it.
So they have enough people.
Yeah, Tokyo is another huge city. Everywhere we went, the big cities. And, you know, it makes me appreciate this place in the country here. We don't have anybody.
Right. Well, especially there, they had no, it was so little. And I'm not going to say no, because we did find some trees, but they had so little greenery, so few trees. It's just
yeah. What trees they did have on the streets were like pitiful excuses for trees.
Well, and that was that one part where we were driving. There was a part where there was a park over there. I don't want to give the impression that there's nothing
there.
Not parks
like...
No, but there was a park. There was a park that had a lot of trees in it, but not like other cities we've been to.
Yeah, they were mostly just like trunks with where all the limbs had been cut off. There was no greenery. Well, you know, that's where Singapore learned a lesson. They have these beautiful parks there. They don't have any smog because Hong Kong completely cut everything down to make a bigger, more room to build houses. Mm. But if these cities are huge with the
people. I'm trying to remember if it was Tokyo or not, but we were seeing trees on top of buildings. So,
it may have been there.
Yeah, it's like people were trying to get trees in there, trying to get
kind
greenery.
Of greenery. Mm-hmm. But... we had a good experience in Tokyo, too. We went to this one temple, and it was on the edge of town, out there, and that was beautiful. The statue of the Buddha, and the shopping, they had all
the Japanese market.
We got to see some things there. But when we took off from Tokyo, Julia said this was very interesting to her. She was looking down on Tokyo.
Well, from not to make it sound like that. I was on the airplane looking at it from the airplane.
Well, I didn't mean it that
right.
way. We were in the airplane, and she was looking down on Tokyo. She was on that side of the plane.
And it was just an incredible. I've not ever seen a city. It looked different from any city I've seen from the airplane. And it just kept going. Oh, my goodness. As far as you could see, it was just concrete. It was buildings. And I just kept looking both ways. It was as far as you could see. Usually you see the end of your town, of the city, and it just kept going and going and going. It was just concrete, concrete, concrete. And it was different, because usually you'll see like the center part. You'll see the city, and then it kind of starts meandering out.
You see the downtown part.
Right,
and the
but it wasn't like that. It was like it just kept going. It's hard to describe. But then I could finally see, as we kept flying, I could see that it ended at the foot of these mountains. I was like, okay, well, there, that's, you know, and it probably wasn't all Tokyo. It was probably all these suburbs that came together or whatever, these
but
sections.
But it was huge.
It was absolutely huge. But then I could see, okay, it's going to end at these mountains. So there was an end to it. And then we're starting to fly over the mountains. Okay, now there's nobody there. I thought, well, that's just amazing. You know, I start seeing a house here or a house there. It'd be very sparse. And I thought, I wonder how they feel. You know, you kind of put yourself in, what do these people do? What do they think? I wonder how often they go to Tokyo, to the city, you know, things like that. So I'm just observing all of that. And then I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw another mountain over here that had snow on it. And I thought, oh, my goodness. Because when we were coming into Tokyo, we kept seeing Mount Fuji over here in the distance, and we were wondering, is it something we could see? And they said, no, it's a ways out of the city. Well, sure enough, as we're flying over there, we ended up flying right over it, and so I got to get a really good picture of it.
And it is an extinct volcano. That's why it has that shape to it.
Very cool.
So we got that. Oh, I do want to say, too, when we were going to the temple, rickshaws still exist in Japan. But they're for tourists. They charge you to, if you want to get a rickshaw ride. That used to be, that was the only mode of transportation before they got all these cars.
And those are legitimate ones. I think in other places we've been, they've had them on bicycles, with bicycles and with horses. But these are actually people doing these.
Uh-huh.
Had the little hats, the whole bit.
Yeah. And in Tokyo, there were bicycles. There weren't all those motor scooters.
Right.
But everywhere you go, there's people, and all the traffic really shows you how crowded the world is getting to be.
In certain places, they're all concentrated in these cities. Once you get out of the cities, then you have a lot of land with few people. So it's like, for some reason, I think you have people that like cities.
Well, they go where the jobs are, too, mm-hmm. where the money is. Well, you know, in London, they said they go out, they can't get the money they do in they're working right in London.
Right.
So, anyway, that was interesting. And then we went from there to Australia. And finally, we're back to where we can understand people. Somewhat. At least it was English, but they have the accents. But we've been to Australia so much. I've been going over there for 20 years. But at least we were back where you could read the signs and you could understand the people. And this time we just went to Sydney. In the past, we've had classes in all the cities of Australia.
Well, the major cities.
The major cities along the rim. But this time we only went to Sydney because we wanted to get home for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. That's all
weeks.
We could do, yes.
And so we had two classes there, so we were there for 2 weeks. But we are changing the way we're going to be doing the classes now because these long trips, I mean, that was a 13-hour flight back. I wanted to break it up by stopping in Honolulu or something, but they said, no, not at Christmas time. Everybody's going to Hawaii. So we had to do the 13-hour flight all the way back. So just getting where those long flights like that are just really taking a toll on me, and we've been doing it for too many years. And the flight's not enjoyable. The trips, seeing the people and having the classes, I love that. And teaching and mingling with the people, that part is good. It's just getting there and getting back.
Right.
One speaker I knew, she said, I wish we could do like Star Trek.
I was just thinking that, if we could just beam up and get over there.
Yeah, she said, she had the same thing. I don't like the trip. So we could just beam me up, Scotty, and drop me down. That'd be the best way.
Bilocate, whatever. We're probably not too far from that. So.
That'd be the best way to do it. You wouldn't have to have that long flight. So I try to cut up the flights as much as we can to stop that. But anyway, we had a wonderful time there. And everywhere we go, Christmas. And there, it's the same way. We were down in...
Oh, the fun thing there was, well, they didn't have many decorations. But because it's so warm, they said it's just really hard to get
summer.
Into the feel of it. You know, the spirit of Christmas. But their commercials were so funny because they have all these Santa surfing and things like that. Santa's in bikinis. And
you got to remember, Australia is in the opposite hemisphere. So there it was summertime.
Right.
And it was beautiful. It was 80 in the 80s.
Oh, gorgeous. It was so wonderful.
The sunshine, everybody running around in short sleeves and shorts. And that's what Mavis said. She said, I don't want to leave the summer. We got
to
go back.
Why would anybody go to the winter?
They could go back home to the winter. But it was beautiful weather. And Darling Harbor, they had these big Santa Clauses out there in the harbor. And they had fireworks that shot off that one night.
Saturday night, yeah.
Yeah. And so they're all in the spirit there. So we had the Christmas spirit. We just weren't home. But even in Japan, Taiwan, China, everywhere, Santa Clauses and Christmas trees and lights.
And carols, Christmas carols, everything. But I have to say, we do it more here, because as soon as we got to L.A., it was Christmas. I mean, the we do it much more than those countries, maybe all the countries, I don't know.
We overdo it, because that's what they said in England. They don't do the lights like we do.
Yeah, but those are pretty. That's what's so pretty.
They said this was electricity.
But that's what's so pretty. That's the magical
yeah.
part.
So, yeah, when we left Sydney and got back to L.A., we stayed there for a couple of days. We couldn't get home right away. And, yeah, it was beautiful. That was Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel was just magical.
Absolutely. See, that's the pretty part. All the lights and all the...
I think we're coming down to time. We're going to have to stop. But you can see this was quite a trip. And it was good to have Christmas in all those countries.
Mm-hmm.
Winter in Beijing, and then summer in Sydney.
Right.
Come back here, it's winter, but at least the snow has melted.
Right. Yeah. I would like for some of the warmth in Australia, though.
Yeah, brought that with us. I think we pretty well covered the whole trip. Next week, we'll find something else to talk about then. But I'd like to let you in on our adventures and our travels. Even though it's hard getting in and out, it's wonderful while we're there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so I think it's time for us to sign off. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and I'm glad we're all back in the U.S. of A.
And next time we talk to you, it'll be a new year.
It sure will.
So Happy New Year, everybody. Make it great.
It may be late to say Merry Christmas, but Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Okay, good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.